Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the library shelf of free speech because there's all sorts of stuff here. You would be surprised at the various points of view that are spoken freely here, and you're going to hear some of them today. You're going to hear some takes that maybe you wouldn't have thought you were going to hear. And you certainly wouldn't hear in other places. So welcome, and you're welcome. All right. So today we have and the way you support that, of course, is you go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send badly needed fundage. All right. So today we have Mark Collett. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. I hope you're good on this fine, sunny beginning of the week day. I hope you've not got all of your money in Russian bonds, though, because I hear there's been a debt default.
Hey, I'm not going to say what Russian instruments I do or don't have my my funds in. I will say that Russia, the Russian economy is strong. This bond thing is weird because, okay, so finally, and, you know, I, when you were talking about this, because I know that they've been trying to push the Russians into default on their bonds. They've been trying to do this ever since the start of the war. And, you know, I know that there's been a lot of talk about this. And of course, it's not as if the Russians don't have money to pay. And it's not as if the Russians don't want to pay or are not, you know, refusing to pay. It's that they've been kicked off the SWIFT system. There's been all these sanctions. And so you were telling me about it, and I hadn't actually seen the news yet. And so, you know, I go to while you're talking to me, I'm looking at RT. I don't see anything on RT. So I go over to AP News. I don't see anything on AP News. I go to, okay, well, it's financial news. So I go to Bloomberg, and I scroll way, way, way down, and finally I see this article. It says, Russia's foreign bond investors left caught in sanctions web. So Bloomberg, they're not even saying it's like, the headline isn't so much Russia defaults on its bonds, but that the bondholders are left caught in a sanctions web. And I'll just read the first sentence and kick it over to you. Investors caught in the web of international sanctions that push Russia into default on bond payment are faced with a choice of seeking recompense now or biding their times. One more sentence. Sanctions aimed at punishing Russia for its invasion of Ukraine shut it out of the world's financial system, blocking its ability to transfer funds to creditors. Okay, so those are the first two sentences. But yet, I think you're going to tell us about a lot of people who are jumping up and down saying, look, Russia's defaulted on its bonds. You know, Russia's on the verge of collapse. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, I saw this on Twitter this morning when I woke up. I'm obviously not able to tweet, but I can go on the site and look at what's trending, etc. And I got the notification that Russia have defaulted on their bond payments. And I thought, this is quite interesting. And I thought I'd see what people's takes were on this. And there were a few actual interesting takes of people saying, you do realize this is not going to hurt Russia. And the interesting thing is, despite some news outlets crowing and saying, Russia have defaulted, they can't make their payments, this is the fault, this is the first Russian default since 1918, the Bolshevik Revolution, this is something so out of the ordinary. And obviously they're trying to, when I say they, I mean people who are trying to make a big issue of this, are trying to make out that this is something almost unprecedented, and that this is going to be seriously bad news for Russia, as if the average Russian person is now sitting at home thinking, oh my gosh, you know, we better get rid of Vladimir Putin because we've defaulted on our debt and we haven't done that since 1918, and oh my gosh, this looks terrible, and what are we going to do? I don't think that's the case whatsoever. I think this is very interesting because the only people that this default is going to actually hurt is people who are the creditors. It's not going to hurt the debtor. It's not going to hurt Russia. For example, if you say to me, Mark, you don't have to pay any of your debts whatsoever. In fact, all of your debts are basically done. You know, that's it. Your debts are done. You don't have to pay them anymore. You're not going to have banking facilities. And that means nobody is going to have to be paid by you. Well, I've got to be frank. The only people that's really going to hurt are the people that I owe money to. That isn't going to hurt me. And if it goes further, if you take this analogy further, it's like saying to me, well, Mark, not only are you not going to have to repay any of these debts, not only are you basically going to default and not have to repay, but as well as not repaying, you are now going to be in a very, very interesting position where no one can force you to repay. So you're going to be in a position where ultimately you don't repay and no one can force you. Well, that leaves me in a position where I've just written off all my debts. And if there was a situation, as I said, where this cannot be enforced, so you know, if somebody stopped me from repaying my debts, but then sent debt collectors around to sort of take as much as they could from my property or take my motor vehicle or do something of the sort, then I would be in some degree of trouble because then I'd have to fend those off. But that's not going to happen to Russia. There's no big, bad, dirty debt collector going to come into Russia with an army of people and start taking everyone's flat-screen TV and their motor cars. All that's going to happen in this case is that the people who lent Russia the money are going to be hurt. And it's just one of those funny things, because Russia obviously hasn't defaulted in the sense that you would think a default actually, in the sense that you would think of when you say the word default. When you say default, what you think is somebody hasn't paid their debt. They've been given 30 more days to make good on that because they haven't hit it by the time. And within that period of grace, they still have failed to meet their debt repayment model. Now, this hasn't actually happened because Russia haven't defaulted. Russia have been prevented from defaulting. So it's not really a default. And the only people it's going to hurt...
prevented from repaying.
Yeah, they've been prevented from repaying. It's not really a default. They've been prevented from paying. So ultimately, Russia do have the money, so they're not poverty stricken. They're not finished. They're not done. They've got the money. They've just been told that they can't pay because of Western sanctions. So the only people this is going to hurt is the creditor. Russia are just sat there with the money. And some people are saying, oh, well, this will be a powerful message to the rest of the world. Russia will find it difficult to get credit in the future. Well, of course it won't. It'll just go elsewhere for credit. It'll go to China. It'll go to other BRICS countries. People will lend Russia money. And Russia will just repay them on their terms. And the interesting thing about this, and this is the last thing I'll say, is when you look at Russia's debts are some of the smallest national debt in the whole world. If you look at what Putin has done with the Russian economy, it's basically a work of art. What he's done is absolutely wonderful. The guy has essentially restructured the country. So it's a low debt, self-sufficient, export-led economy, giving Russia a huge amount of power and a huge amount of strength in the global marketplace. So I think this default is something that has been completely manufactured by the West. But like most of the other sanctions, not only won't this hurt Russia, it will likely hurt Western institutions instead. And those Western institutions or individuals will be people who have bought these bonds and are now not getting their payments. And again, I just find all of this so, so interesting because it tells you something about the changing nature of the world. The West is so used to being the bully. Western leaders are so used to bullying nations that now somebody has stood up to them. And that is obviously Russia and Putin. And they don't understand how to deal with a nation that can stand on its own two feet and give them the middle finger. And because of that, I find this just fascinating, fascinating to watch. And I see the cope on places like Twitter, people sort of saying, oh, well, this will be a massive blow to Putin's ego. Putin will be reeling with this. He'll be embarrassed nationally. You know, this is the kind of thing that'll break him down. I don't think he's going to care about this because I don't think the average Russian person will care. I don't think this is going to do any damage whatsoever to the economy. I think this is another thing where the West have shown just how toothless they are against a power like Russia.
You know, and you mentioned the BRICS countries, right? BRICS, originally BRIC, there was just one BRIC, which was Brazil, Russia, India, China, and then South Africa started getting involved. So they used the S from South Africa, so it became BRICS. Well, now I guess it's going to be BRICSIA because more countries want to get involved with them. So, you know, if you were having India, for instance, or Brazil saying, we're not so sure about this. Russia's in default and they're the bad guys. And, you know, China's they're all chi-coms and everything. We don't want part of this. If you were having major countries fleeing from the BRICS, that would be one thing. But you've got, Iran's asked to join. Iran's it's an oil exporting country. It's a fair sized country. You've got Argentina, which is in the Western Hemisphere. It's in the American sphere of influence, and Argentina is now seeking membership. And then you've got Indonesia, which is cozying up as well, and the BRICS are looking into a establishing some sort of reserve currency, which would be a basket of their own currencies. And of course, Russia's accumulating gold to back its ruble. And you know, you mentioned that the Russian fiscal and economic policies over the past couple of decades since Vladimir Putin took over have been very responsible, fiscally responsible. And you know, when he took over after the 1990s, you know, the Russia, first of all, the Soviet Union, the last few years, had borrowed a lot of money. There was a very substantial debt, foreign debt, that the Soviet Union had when it broke up. And there was an agreement between the successor countries, the countries that emerged from the aftermath of the Soviet Union, that Russia would be the successor to the Soviet Union. The other countries would be new independent countries. And that meant that Russia got the seat at the UN, the permanent member on the Security Council. It meant that as far as the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty was concerned, Russia was a nuclear state, and then the other 14 countries would be non-nuclear states, and they transferred their weapons to Russia. And the downside for Russia was it and it alone inherited that massive Soviet debt. Ukraine and all these other countries got off scot-free. They got fresh starts. So you had that, and of course the 1990s was a period of just massive looting by these Jewish oligarchs who took over the Russian economy. They just took it over with the help of the U.S. Treasury Department and Harvard University and George Soros and all this crowd. As you correctly pointed out, that Putin over the past 20 years, first he used Russia's energy exports to pay down the debt, and then faced with increasing hostility from the West, really starting from around 2008 or so, maybe even earlier, he went on his program of import substitution. So they stopped importing so much, built up their own manufacturing base for consumer goods and, you know, things like that. And now they're in excellent shape. And of course, they've also, the past several years, they've been improving relations with China and developing alternatives to all sorts of, formerly Western-dominated institutions like the SWIFT International Settlements System. You've got, you know, the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative is kind of displacing the role of the World Bank. I mean, there's and countries are gravitating towards it. The G27, the G20 summit is going to take place in Indonesia, I guess, in November. Putin's going to attend. It's going to probably wind up being boycotted by, you know, the Biden and whoever Boris Johnson's successor is going to be.
Boris Johnson's not sticking around for much longer, I can tell you that.
So, I mean, that's where we are. Unless you are in this little echo chamber of, you know, Britain, the United States, Western Europe, Canada, if you're outside that echo chamber, people see what's going on. Russia's winning the war, and they're winning the sanctions war. They're winning the economic war of attrition. And, you know, the West is on the verge of collapse. And, you know, we can talk about the West, but, you know, what else do you have to say about this?
Well, not much, really. I just find it very, very interesting that, as I said, the West has become so used to bullying other nations, so used to pushing other nations around. And things such as debt defaults were always seen as a death knell for any nation. Any nation that ended up in this position, that was it. You've defaulted on your debt. You'd never get money again. You'd never be an economic superpower. Basically, this was going to plunge your nation back.
Yeah, your currency would collapse. Your interest rates would go sky high. You'd get massive inflation. That's not going to happen in Russia.
Exactly. And your country would almost be blasted back to a third world state because of it. But you're not actually seeing that here. What you're actually seeing is, again, the only people harmed by this are probably people living in the West who have helped, you know, who bought these bonds or have in some way, you know, in good faith, offered credit to Russia based on the fact that they thought over an extended period of time they would get a great return on their investment. And now they're not getting that. And that's happening in a time of what is already a very, very worrying economic circumstances. So for me, this is just going to bring further economic misery to people living in the West while Putin sits there smiling. And I think it really does underline the fact that Biden and Johnson are starting to look like, to draw an analogy, those old boxers who have been carried for years and are just used to winning fights. Every fight they go up against is just a journeyman or a jobber who's there that they can knock down, add an extra win to their record. And for the first time in years, this boxer is going up against somebody who can actually fight, a credible challenger. And obviously, after years of being on top, being carried, you know, not having proper opposition, it really does show, because the West doesn't know what to do. The West is being completely outmaneuvered by Russia. And this is a very interesting thing, because I often talk about the West being a state of bullies. I often talk about them being a state of bullies. And I use the term bully because that's very important for a number of reasons. But one of those reasons is, if you remember what it was like being in the schoolyard as a young lad, when you came up against a bully, when you faced off against a bully, it was always quite terrifying. But the first person to put that bully on his backside, to punch him in the face, bust his nose, and send him crashing to the floor onto his bum, you know, as his eyes teared up, everyone else in the playground smiled, and everyone else in the playground knew that bully's time as the bully was up. Because all it needed was that one show of defiance to give everyone else strength. And this could be the one show of defiance that ends Western global dominance as we know it.
Well, let's hope so. Okay, well, we are up at the first break. We will be back shortly. Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see.
And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
We are back. Okay, we are going to switch gears now. There's other stuff going on. The United States, it looked like we were going to have the midterm elections coming up in November, and there is going to be a lot of focus on the economic collapse, inflation, maybe the stupidity of the war. Massive immigration, illegal immigration coming across the border, even, the COVID stuff. It looked like it was going to be a referendum on the craziness that's been imposed on us. And then all of a sudden this thing happened in the Supreme Court. And, some people might say there are people out there who think like Queen Elizabeth and Henry Kissinger, like they get together under Lake Geneva and they plan out these things and issue directives and ninja monkeys go and threaten everybody into doing their bidding. I'm not quite sure that's really the case. I think what happened is Donald Trump, in order to get himself ingratiated in 2016 with the evangelical crowd, he promised that he would appoint these justices from a list. Supreme Court justices from a list that they would approve of. And so he wound up nominating these Supreme Court justices. And frankly, the Roe versus Wade decision rested on dubious legal logic, right? But at any rate, it's happened. All this, after 49 years, all of a sudden, it's been overturned. And there's a lot that, you know, I want to ask what you, as a non-American, what you think of it, but all of a sudden that's what's dominating American politics now. And we might, instead of having a referendum on all the craziness, we might wind up having a referendum on abortion. And that actually could go in a variety of ways, because the abortion issue has been polarized and dominated by the extremists on both sides. I would say that the you're going to see, you know, on the one side you've got like basically the pro infanticide side, you know, that the pro abortion people, there are literal pro infanticide people amongst them. And then what you're getting on the Republican side is you're increasingly getting like a rapist rights movement. You know, rapists, if they can impregnate a woman, that woman's got to give birth. So I'm going to kick it over to you now.
Well, firstly, I think what we've got here from the pro-abortion lobby, let's call them that, the pro-abortion group, is absolutely unfounded hysteria. Now, we keep being told that the most important thing in the West is democracy. Well, two things. Democracy and the power of the press to inform us of the truth. Those two things. But let's just lead with democracy. The democracy is this holy shibboleth, and the democratic rights of people should always be respected, and that ultimately, without said democracy, the West would not be great. The West would not be the powerhouse of decency, the beacon of light in the world anymore, if it wasn't for democracy. Now, Roe versus Wade, interestingly, actually took democracy away from the people. And I think it's very important to always remember that America is not a country. And that, to some people outside of America...
America is not a country. Okay.
Yeah. That, I think that for a lot of people outside of America is something that they don't understand. America is not a country. America is a federation of states, the United States of America, just in the same way that the European Union was a federation of European countries. Now, each one of those 50 American states is, in essence, a country. It has its own culture, its own traditions, and its own laws. And those culture, all that culture, those traditions and those laws have sprung forth from the people who founded those particular states and who live in them today. And as such, each individual state has their own abortion laws based upon the culture, traditions, religious sensibilities and moral stance of the people who founded that state and of the people who live in that state today. That is democracy. So if the people in one state want to rip babies out of the womb, you know, a day before 9 months ticks over on the calendar, essentially slaughtering a completely viable infant, that is within the law because they have chosen to do that, despite how demonic I think that is.
In New York State, by the way, it can be after it's been taken out of the womb.
Yeah, absolutely sick. I mean, this is just that is just demonic. But the point is, if they want to do that, that is democracy. But equally, in a more religious, conservative, with a small c state, you would have something different taking place. And what you would have taking place in that more conservative state is the opposite. You would have a more restriction. You would have a more restrictive set of legislation passed on abortion. But that's democracy. Mm. And Roe versus Wade was anti-democracy because it imposed exactly the same abortion laws on every state, regardless of the sensibilities and moral stance of those living in it.
Okay, well, we'll get back to this after the break.
Sweet Leilani, heavenly flower.
The truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you. And your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Carrie: great product, and I will continue to use. I've been taking it for over a year now. I'm 60 and feel great. I would highly recommend this product to anyone over the age of 40. Amazon customer: 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. Extendivite has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Amazon customer: 5 stars. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us
800-724-2719 extension 3. 800-724-2719 extension 3.
You are my paradise completed.
Oh, lovely Leilandia.
You are my dream.
And we are back. All right, so you as you were saying, Roe versus Wade imposed uniform sets of abortion standards on the country. There was a standard, and as I recall, the essence of Roe versus Wade was there would be no restrictions during the first trimester, and then you could have like regulation during the second trimester. And so within that framework, there was a certain amount of wiggle room, right? I mean, you could that second trimester in particular, you know, how much regulation, how much restriction would there be? I guess you could have regulation during the first trimester and restrictions during the second trimester or something like that. I don't remember exactly. It's actually been an issue that I've never really, that I think has dominated way too much of America's political attention. In fact, it's like the only thing that we're allowed to argue about. Only things that we're allowed to focus on are sexual issues. Sex politics. Nothing else we're allowed to think about. Our friendly Jewish overlords take care of everything else for us, but we're allowed to fight over this. at any rate, so So there's kind of two issues with the ruling. One, the one you get at, that it's centralized, and the other was that it's court imposed. And honestly, in terms of public policy, frankly, for I think to have, given where our country is, given the state of our country, where we are with our culture, with our society, that access to legal abortion is public policy that I approve of. I know a lot of people don't, and people who have religious objections to it, I fully understand. And I'm not gonna say that this isn't taking human life, because it is. I'm not gonna say that. I'm trying to be as honest as possible.
I think it's an interesting point you're making, and I always feel, Patrick, that sometimes when you articulate yourself, what you're basically saying, if I can get this correct, tell me if I'm wrong, but I want to interpret this in a more sort of audience-friendly way, so your audience doesn't turn on you and come after you with flaming torches and pitchforks.
Please do, because I don't want the flaming torches.
No, I don't want you trapped in the windmill tonight, looking down at the village as the villagers amass below. By the way, if people don't get that, that's a reference to Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Okay. Now, basically, what Patrick's saying is, in an ideal world, in a moral, ethnocentric state, you may well pass very strict abortion laws, because you would be living in a high trust, high IQ society where white people had taken their destiny in their own hands and were living a moral life. And morality is always linked with responsibility. And when we say responsibility, you have to take responsibility for your own actions. You cannot have a moral society where no one takes responsibility for action. And abortion is the ultimate taking no responsibility for your action move. It's the ultimate in jettisoning responsibility. So if you had this wonderful ethno-state, you would absolutely not want young girls to be going out having promiscuous sex, and you absolutely would not want to be aborting healthy white babies. That would be something that would be unconscionable. However, I think what Patrick's trying to say is that in many states in America, the vast majority of abortions are not, in fact, abortions being had by young white girls who have had an unfortunate drunken encounter with a handsome young white man and are aborting a healthy white baby that could go on to be a warrior for our cause, or a thought leader, or a poet, or an artist, or a great orator that raises up the white race. The vast majority of these abortions in America are actually abortions from unattached African-American women who have basically only kept their numbers in check for the last 30 or 40 years because of abortion. And without abortion, the African-American population would be significantly larger and may well have already surpassed the white population in a number of states had there not been abortion as an option. So I think when we discuss legislation, you have to discuss legislation for a perfect world and legislation sometimes for an imperfect world. And if we're legislating for an imperfect world, that legislation might be different in some subtle and some not so subtle ways to what it would be if you were writing it for a perfect world. And as I said, the last thing I want to see is healthy white babies being aborted en masse. But equally, I don't want to see white people being bred out of existence in America by vast numbers of non-white children being birthed that would otherwise have been dealt with by Planned Parenthood. And ultimately, I've got to be honest, I don't want to see any child being aborted, because I think, you know, the murder of children is horrific. But in these grim times where white people are, I was going to say edging, but it's not edging, it's sort of speeding towards being an ethnic minority, unfortunately, I think abortion in America has been something that has actually held back that date. And now, with the Roe versus Wade being repealed, we may see a baby boom, but it ain't going to be a white baby boom. Is that pretty much what your point was?
Well, that is an important part of the point. So there's that. You have, and you know, regardless of the race, but there are racial tendencies here. When you have like irresponsible people, let's just say people who have no intention of taking care of children. They don't want the children. They have no intention of taking care of the children. Well, think of the cuckoo bird, right? The cuckoo birds don't take care of their children. They have no intention. They just lay their egg in another bird's nest, and then the other birds take care of the children to the detriment of their own children. And so, you know, what's happening here is you've got you're going to have in Mississippi, in Alabama, where the vast majority of abortions currently are, you know, they're African Americans. Those are going to be outlawed. The people who are too irresponsible to avoid unwanted pregnancies are not likely to have the agency to get themselves up to, you know, Maryland or Virginia or New Jersey where they can get an abortion. So they're going to have the baby. But no, it's okay because we have adoption. We have adoption. So they'll be adopted by white families. Oh, so that'll make these blacks cuckoos. And then who are the cucks?
I do see that as a viable point. I think that is something that unfortunately will be the case. And obviously,
it'll be massively the case.
Not only will that be the case, which is something that's very unfortunate, what you will see is healthy white couples then saying, well, we can't have our own. We can't have our own babies because we're too busy looking after Shanika and Jamal's third illegitimate child. So we're not going to have a white one. We're not going to have a white one. Our genetics are going to be lost to history and our family tree is going to wither and die because we are looking after the cuckoo egg, so to speak, or the cuckoo brood, the brood of little cuckoos living in our nest. And that is very, very sad. And I think you make an important point. And I think with abortion, it is very difficult to speak about abortion in a way without emotion completely clouding things. So, for example, in my book, shameless plug, The Fall of Western Man, available for free at www.thefallofwesternman.com, the book deals with lots of things, and it does deal with abortion. And I say in my book that I do believe in some cases abortion should be an available option to parents. I say that abortion should be an available option. Now that upsets a lot of people because one of those exceptions that I said we shouldn't be aborting, you know, healthy white children conceived in a healthy way. But I do believe that in what I term abhorrent cases of abhorrent conception, which is rape, incest, child abuse, I do think that abortion should still be on the table there. I don't believe that every rapist should be able to choose the mother of their child. I think that is a very dangerous thing. And in the UK, where we have seen these Pakistani Muslim grooming gangs, you know, commit such horror and, you know, bring so much suffering to white communities, I do not believe that the girls who have been targeted by these gangs should be told, no, you are forced to bring up your rapist's child. I think that's completely wrong. Now, again, I'm not saying that those girls should be forced to abort. If they say, no, I can't bring myself to do that, it's still a baby, that should be their choice, but they shouldn't be forced either way. And I think if you completely outlawed abortion in any case, in every case, I think not only would you be passing a rapist's charter, but again, you would be preventing another couple of very good reasons for abortion. Because I also believe that those parents who are going to have a child that is going to carry, you know, a heavy disability, I believe they should be given the right to choose. And I also think if the mother's life is at threat, then again, abortion should be an option. So say, for example, myself and my partner were going to have another child. We were lucky and we were blessed with another child. And we were told, well, actually, if Mrs. Mark carries this baby to term, she is going to ultimately have a 99% chance of dying. And then you, the new baby and little Sophia are going to then have to, you know, fend for yourself without Mrs. Mark. I don't think I could do that. I don't think I could deprive Sophia of a daughter, of a mother, sorry.
It's a real thing. And child death in childbirth used to be extremely common. Now, the modern medicine has really alleviated that to an extent, but so has abortion. Abortion's been part of that. And, you know, my own grandmother had been told she shouldn't have any more children. Well, she did, and she died. It used to be very, very common. So, like Teddy Roosevelt's wife died in childbirth. It used to be very common dying in childbirth. The health of the mother thing has been used as like excuse to do all sorts of things, right? Like even this infanticide bill in New York. Yeah, if you can get a healthcare professional to say that delivering the baby or having the baby is going to cause psychological harm to the woman, then she can have a post-birth abortion. So, I mean, it does get abused. I'm not saying it doesn't get abused, but it's also a real thing.
But again, what we've got to remember here is we would need to differentiate between legislating for our perfect society, you know, a stable, high trust, high IQ ethno state, and legislating for an imperfect society such as one in which we live. And you've got to say that if we were passing this legislation in an ethno state, there would always be very, very stringent checks and balances. So when we said threat to the mother's life, it would be a physical threat of death resulting from childbirth. So that would be if the woman was to attempt to naturally give birth to that child, or if the child was to continue to grow in the womb, that would, in all reasonable likelihood, kill the mother. This would not be a case in a perfect society of, oh, well, the mother's going to suffer from a little postnatal depression, supposedly. Thus, we have to kill the child so the mother doesn't get down in the dumps post-pregnancy. That is absolutely, an abuse of what is a sensible caveat. So, again, sensible caveats would be abused in a sick society. So, you know, I do think it's very important that we say that, you know, what we would pass as legislation in our perfect world may be abused in an imperfect world. But the people, I think any reasonable person, would actually say that if a woman fell pregnant and she had an ectopic pregnancy, which is where the baby does implant and does begin to grow, but grows either too high up in the womb or, more accurately, within the fallopian tubes, that would always result in the death of the mother. A baby cannot grow in the fallopian tubes without killing the mother. At that point, the baby has to be removed and aborted, or the mother dies. Now, I think that is obviously a common sense case that, and obviously, as the baby grows in the fallopian tube, it's not only going to kill the mother, but the baby would logically die at the same time, because by the time the baby's big enough to sort of rupture the woman's internal organs and kill her, it would, even if it was extracted, it could never survive that process, because it wouldn't be viable. It wouldn't be able to live outside of, you know, the mother's body. So things like that, I think, are common sense, really. But obviously, again, the psychological stuff, when you start saying it also includes psychological stuff, that is massively open to abuse. But going back to what we started with, I do think that, especially outside of America, the reason people don't understand Roe versus Wade is because they don't actually understand that America is not just one country. It is a federation of states. And really, Roe versus Wade, in a very sensible, down-to-earth manner, without there being any hint of hyperbole, is an infringement on the democratic rights of people living in states that don't want abortion. And those people do have a democratic right to choose, just as those in states that do want abortion have a democratic right to choose.
And okay, and that's where we're headed. At any rate, I think we're up on the last break. We'll be right back.
Tiny bubble, make me happy. You know how large, make me.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of Happy Packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
And we are back. Like, in talking about this issue, it's been framed in, mostly in terms of the interests of the fetus, the baby, the embryo. And you know, when you get down to it, if you look at species and you look at parents, put a massive amount of investment in a lot of species, a massive amount of investment into rearing their kids. And you think of the emperor penguin fathers just balancing that egg between their abdomen and their toes for an entire Antarctic winter, just without eating, just doing that. And massive investment.
Don't they eat for the whole winter?
Yeah, they just sit there. They lose weight. They just huddle together. You got the massive numbers. They're all huddling together with their egg on there, and they're meanwhile the females are out feeding, and then they come back, and you know maybe they puke some fish into the husband's mouth. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a penguin, but anyway, massive amount of labor, and yet with this, we're saying okay, well, the most irresponsible people with often the most irresponsible genetic traits, the irresponsible people can just reproduce at will, and we'll subsidize it completely. Well, even if they don't want the babies, we're going to force them to have the babies, and we're going to take care of those babies up until you know their entire life cycle. Honestly, you know, I think this is sacrificing society. This is not viable in the long term. It's just not viable in the long term. And it's putting civilization on the cross. That's what I'll say.
Well, I do believe that this is going to be very interesting. I believe there's going to be major upheaval in America. I think there's going to be a lot of different individuals and groups showing their true colors. And we are seeing great civil upheaval and you know unrest in America at the moment. And the people causing that are obviously people who are liberals or the far left, Antifa types. And this is going to be a major challenge, and it could go either way. This could be the kind of thing that actually causes, I think, a really populist resurgence in the sort of Christian right, who may well now say, well, finally somebody's done something that we wanted. And you could see a surge in red states of people coming out and voting for Republicans. You could see people say, look, we finally got what we wanted. We are going to come out and reward you know, our politicians for giving us what we wanted. That is one thing that you could well see. And you tend to find that the religious right are quite good at actually going out and voting. They're quite good at repaying any favor that is done for them. But you could also see in blue states a big swing of you know, people coming out and voting Democrat as a protest vote, as saying, look, we don't want this. This is my way of protesting against this. So I'm not actually sure whether this will cause any actual swings in terms of state power. What I think this may well cause is a shoring up of power for both sides. I think this will motivate both the religious right to come out in greater force to vote for the people they were already voting for. And I think on the other side, you will see the far left, the most dribbling liberal loons, all coming out and reaffirming exactly why they need to go to the polls and vote Democrat. And as such, I think this will cause a further deepening of the rift within America and a further deepening of the rift between these different states, which have very different cultures, very different traditions, and very different sensibilities, which takes me back to my initial point. America is not a country. It's a federation of states. And a federation of states comes together more closely when the states have more similar sensibilities.
It may soon be a former federation of states.
That's where I was going with this. This is another reason that could cause the breakdown of America as we
went. Yep, well, we'll be talking about that, I'm sure. But we're out of time for today. I want to thank you so much for joining me, Mark.
Oh, it's amazing. Thank you, Patrick. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You can't handle handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because